This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Here we are, Talk of Asian Marketing, with another exciting and interesting topic, or actually a mind-numbing, boring topic in a way, since what we're going to be talking about are conferences and or meetings held in Asia in general, but specifically where we know about Taiwan, China, places like this where they have a certain kind of flavor and characteristic. And I have my partner in crime, James Stanworth, online talking with us today, who's been to a number of these conferences. James is located at National Tsinghua University in central Taiwan. James, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Clyde. You know the one you forgot? Singapore there. You said China?
No.
Taiwan?
Well I'm in Singapore, and I have a new position. I'm a director, and I don't know anything about boring meetings. I don't know what you're talking about.
Excuse me while I drift off.
It doesn't exist where I am. And we also have on the line a man who has experience with meetings. My previous boss at one time, and I've sat through his meetings, Robert Reynolds, who is at Jinan, National Jinan University, and has a new position as director of the Foreign Language and Literature Department. Robert, you've never held a boring meeting, have you?
No, of course not.
No comment.
Next question. Is that on the agenda?
Good point.
If it's not on the agenda, it's not subject for discussion today. Next topic.
Next topic. Move on. Okay. Well, you know, I did find that the most useful tool in Chinese meetings is the lingzi dongyi, which is in what's the official word in Chinese English, Robert?
Extempore motion.
Extemporary motion.
Extempore, it's Latin.
Extempore, oh, okay. Well, you see, that we use it all. It seems to be the one thing. I'm always waking up at the end of the meeting, and I have a lingzi dongyi, so it's the most useful tool. The rest I don't know anything about. But anyway, we got this idea because we were at a conference recently in Shanghai, but it's very similar to conferences we see throughout Asia, Japan, Taiwan, and James was there with me. It was a big marketing conference, a lot of people there. And we kind of got an idea, hey, you know, maybe people will be coming to Asia, going to a conference, and might be surprised by some of the things going on. So today we're going to try to explain some of the basic events happening and then also some of the way information is transferred, which is the mind-numbing way. So we've got some video down there you can take a look at the bottom of the page. And it's an actual conference I was attending recently. And we begin the conference by going in, and you have lots and lots of flowers. Robert, you know about these flowers. I mean, you and I had a conference over at Taoyang one time. We get people to send in flowers. Basically, each flower is sent from someone, isn't it?
Yes. Actually, this can take two forms. One is these big bundles of flowers that occupy the table that keep us from having to look at the unshaven presenters too long. And the other is these, they call them flower rings, which are these things that they sort of put up on tripods. And they do this outside the meeting hall. Do you remember those?
Yep. In fact, I have some of the video, these exactly what these are. They're up on stands. They're up on metal stands. And right. I don't think I have any rings in this one, but these are big bunches of flowers up on stands, and each one will have a card inside, a nice big card saying who it's from.
That's right. And congratulations on a successful meeting, and we are honored to have our such-and-such presenting at the conference, and wish you the best of luck, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And the speakers get flowers, too. They get those big flowers on their lapels, so, sometimes so huge it does actually block their face. So you were not joking.
Yeah, it looks like a whole bouquet sometimes, just pinned right on there.
Yeah, they get pretty big sometimes. And then even at the podium, there'll be flowers up there also. So in the video, you can see as I entered the conference, we have some of these flowers and signs of who they're from. And Robert, have you seen this in other cultural settings before? I mean, this conference was not a huge international conference or not, but the walls are lined with flowers. And where do the flowers come from? Well, they come from other departments. They come from maybe businesses. But even people remotely related will get phone calls. In fact, I got a phone call from the person organizing this. Is it possible your company, your business, I run a small business, could you guys send a flower too? So you actually get called into send flowers.
Right, right. Well, a lot of these things, very often in conjunction with the conference, there's some sort of book display.
Ah. Yes.
Do you get that very often?
Yes, yes. It's like a book company or something.
Right. And so the book companies, you know, guaranteed everyone who's participating in the book display or sale or whatever is going to have at least two pots of flowers.
Exactly.
The university guaranteed the administration will have flowers there.
Yes.
If you're in the School of Management, the College of Management, then it's de rigueur that all the departments should send flowers to you.
All the other departments in the college will send flowers.
In the college will send flowers. Yeah, that's very common. And as for other context, one of the more striking context is these flower rings or flower circles that they have outside. The other place I see that is funerals.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're very common. They're much more common at funerals or even around a person's home who recently passed away.
Or, of course, you know, when they're opening a business, that's also a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Right. In fact, I think that's probably the closest analogy to a lot of this stuff.
Opening a business,
right. Right, right.
Of course, opening a business, you get a lot of the pineapple things. You don't get any pineapple things at a conference.
You often see those big rings outside, don't you, when people are opening a business. And I know the danger of buying the wrong sort of flowers. I bought some flowers for my wife and I brought them back. She roared with laughter. She said, these are funeral flowers.
Yeah, I picked them up on the way home, honey. Here you are.
It's interesting because lilies are the funeral flowers as far as I'm concerned in the States, and they're not funeral flowers here at all. They don't have anything to do with funerals, so it's very tricky. You have to ask people.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
I'm probably in different places. There'll be different flowers. Watch that.
Different colors have those different significances. I know my wife said, "Don't give me any yellow flowers, otherwise you're telling me we want to separate."
Whoops. Well,
in any case, at the conferences, you'll usually the bigger the conference, the more well connected it is, the more flowers you have, and so it's all about face. Actually, you know, they got all these flowers from all the different places. The more, the better. And the bigger, big shots you get, the better. In fact, when you enter the conference, I have some photos we're all sharing here. It's all in the video, too. One thing that might strike you about conferences in Asia is their organization at the front end. Now, I've been to a lot of conferences in the U.S. Maybe, James, you can clue me in on the U.K. But in Asia, you always have this feeling things are really organized at the start. Long tables, sign-in areas, all these young people with suits and ties and everything. And it always looks very, I don't know, very, very formal and very organized. And I don't see that much when I go to conferences overseas. There's one or two tables and the people look very frayed and tired out and very busy. It's just a completely different approach at the very beginning.
Yeah, the UK ones that I went to a while back, very much like that, as you say, everyone's running around a little hassled, and you turn up and you have to beg to get your conference proceedings, conference pack, and then you get that, and then you wonder, you know, where do I go, and there's no suits and no one to help you, and you sort of wander off and start chatting to some other equally lost participant.
Yeah, here you'll actually get people will take you somewhere where you need to go. They'll actually like lead you in. Or in my case, I walked in here, and one of the workers, students actually, was going to lead me in. And then another organizer from the conference pulled me aside and showed me some of the people the flowers were from, Robert. You know, they pointed out, this is from the representative of the district, and this is from the Lifawei, and here, and this is, you know, we know big shots.
Goodness gracious. Oh,
it's so
we don't
symbolic,
get this in linguistic conference.
But it's so symbolic. It's all about sending these meetings, these hints about what's going on and what's happening and how well they're connected and how you're so honored to be here and so on and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that opening as you walk in, the flowers, the emphasizing the face and the connections, and then the students all lined up, and they are usually students. I guess that's the big difference. Back home, maybe in the U.S. or U.K., you wouldn't be able to force students to do all of this work. Robert, could you get away with that in the States?
It depends, right? I mean, I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle from the business people. In the language and literature departments, the students, this is their regular coolie labor. There's no question about it. But I don't know. I think it would probably be more unusual in, say, the business department, where everyone has dreams of telling other people to do this.
True. This is true.
Yeah.
And in fact, usually these students would even be graduate level students. And it's just basically, you know, you want your thesis to pass, you show up for the conference and you show people to their chairs. Understood?
Yes.
So from the organizational perspective, I've seen this. I've seen foreigners come in and they're like, wow, this is really organized. Of course, it's all part of the system of the student-teacher kind of positions and relationships. I think that plays a big role.
Yes, you say. I think the really interesting thing here is that the actual name at the front who's organizing the conference has probably had an idea. Talked about it with a few graduate students and then is long gone. And these graduate students then are the guys peddling and paddling like mad to try and, you know, send out invitations, contact the people who are supposed to attend and talk and so on. And then occasionally the lead organizer will occasionally say something like, how's it going? And then everyone tells him this is jolly good and then disappears. So
exactly.
Often
right.
These guys are really the guys who are motoring away, and then they kind of realize at the front end they should have a suit and look tidy, but then the reality of how organized it is becomes quickly clear. I think, you know, it's like that whole thin ice thing that suddenly you break and the cracks appear and you think, what's going on really?
Yeah, up front it all looks very impressive, and I see foreign academics or business people come in, they're often very impressed with that. You also, you know, you sign in, you come in, you sign in. If you're a special guest, you even have a special book to sign in on, just like weddings. At funerals, too, you sign in, don't you, Robert? When you pass all over your money, you sign.
Yes.
So same thing. So anyway, I've got some video going into the room, and I wanted to just show our listeners or our people watching the video here. One thing that's very impressive in Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore is a lot of these meeting rooms are really high tech. Robert, even remember over at Taoyuan, we had some really nice meeting rooms over there.
Yeah, they will spend big money on this.
Yeah, I won't say the school's name, it's not a big national school, it's not a super famous school, but it's a small kind of small school. But even these guys have this incredible meeting room. They literally, if you guys look at the pictures I sent you, they have three big screens up front with a large stage and then an auditorium with everyone having their own independent seating, microphone, plug-in, internet jack, everything. And it's on one hand, it's very Orwellian because you can see the speakers. Like, he's right in front of you anyway. It's not a huge room. You can see him clearly, but you're going to get three humongous images of him anyway. And these are taken from video cameras that automatically follow the people on stage. And just a really impressive technological exhibit,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I can really echo what you're saying there. Cloud taught in, not a very big, but private school in this summer, did a short course. And I wondered what it was going to be like. We walked into a beautiful new building. The room, the classroom, had this sort of huge electronic podium. It looked like something off the Starship Enterprise. You know, you've got all these buttons to press to make the screen go up, the screen go down, to connect in the audio, whatever kind of audio you want to connect in your notebook, to have the existing built-in computer if you wanted that, to play DVDs. to play any sort of media you wanted. The whole classroom, the flooring was really nice, beautiful tables. Each participant had a really nice nameplate tag. The equipment, both high and low tech, was really, really impressive. And that was just like a regular classroom situation. But I've seen too in some of these big meeting rooms, exactly all this equipment, the cameras, all the portable equipment to control where the camera is, what it's zooming on, and so on. These guys sit at the back with like remote devices to control half this equipment. Really impressive.
Yeah, I think this often impresses visitors, because I've been to conferences, Robert, I've even been to like University of Pennsylvania once, and basically we get dumped into school classrooms for presentations that could be from 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, you're lucky if you have a wireless mic.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. And I mean, and the audience is sitting in these little school kids' chairs, you know.
Right.
But yeah, in Taiwan, they tend to be like the school. I think a room like we're seeing here and what James is talking about, usually the whole college or even the whole university can share it. Robert, wasn't that your mm-hmm. experience over Italian? We could actually check in and use those big rooms.
Yes. No, they. The thing is that they'll, how to put it, the school is very interested, especially in these international conferences. They're very interested in attracting these and hosting these, and it plays a big part in the way the school sells itself. And so for them, this sort of elaborate conference room is, in the first place, it's a good investment even by itself. In the second place, I can't say about Singapore or Hong Kong, but in Taiwan, it's not just the school that's interested in attracting this sort of conference. The government is very interested in attracting this sort of conference, and they will actually provide significant funds to universities who are trying to set up this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I'm stuttering. I'm at a new position myself in Singapore, and I'm helping the University of Stirling set up a program here. And, you know, we're having tons and tons of meetings. It's a lot like Taiwan this way. And one thing you pick up right away is if you're buying things, and this is probably true in every organization, if you're buying something, buy big. Because when you buy small, you'll have meetings forever about every little cent. But if you're buying big, it doesn't matter. And I think a lot of these schools, they buy big, they get government funds, Ministry of Education funds, and they just invest in these huge purchases like this.
Mm. And it's real high-end kit. I mean, I've been just trying to do some e-teaching, and I'd spotted, Clyde, you came up to my school, and when we were setting up the room, just doing a little stuff to get it ready for your presentation, I went to, there was a room at the back, you may have seen it, like yeah. It's got a glass room where they can control all the audio and the images on the screen, and I walked in, I saw this really nice-looking camera just sat there, disconnected. So I checked out, and it turns out this is a really high-end Sony teleconference camera.
Yeah,
and right. It's got the other box to drive the mechanics of it and so on. And so I was checking with the department that owns this bit of kit. I said, oh, we never use that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they always go with the high-end stuff. Cisco systems.
Super high-end.
Philips meeting systems, Sony video stuff. It's always the highest end. But then, James, what you mentioned, I saw in this conference I have video of exactly that problem. We're all ready to begin. Everything's set up. Everything's ready to go. And then usually you'll have the announcer, somebody off on the edge saying, you know, so-and-so conference commences now. And Professor so-and-so will speak now. And he comes up, and guess what?
No sound.
Yeah, the link from the notebook isn't working, or the microphone isn't working. And then there's a like a 2-3 minute pause where everyone just stares at each other. And then there's a scramble, and you never... It seems like no one's ever quite in charge or knows what the systems are. And I know from my own experience in Taiwan, there's never really anyone in charge of them.
No, exactly. Absolutely. No one will... There's nobody to call.
And so half of these features go totally unused because they're very technical, but there's nobody who's responsible for it. There's a guy who has a key to the room, but that's as far as his responsibility goes.
Well, one thing we sort of have to separate here from, I would say that this is not a totally universal situation. What this happens even in mostly in an academic environment, and even in, you know, big schools, this will often happen, that it's not quite set up right, it's not quite working right yet. But there is at least one exception, and that is the conferences that I've been to at Academia Sinica in Taiwan, which is the national central academy, basically. And they always have someone who's in charge, and they always know exactly how to set things up. And the reason this is so is because they have conferences all the time. They're constantly doing this. This is basically their purpose. Their purpose there is to have conferences and have people give papers. And so I would mark them as the one major exception to this. Now, there should be something like this, for example, in China, but I've not yet managed to attend a conference there, so I don't know
when
what
James
the situation
and I were there,
is.
I think it was very similar to Taiwan. That when you had a problem, they called up a student, and the student came and figured it out, you know. And so it's very normal in these conferences. You'll have 10 or more minutes just suddenly disappearing because something fundamentally didn't work. I mean, they couldn't get a guy's mic working. When I was here, I was a reviewer for one paper, so I just said, well, I'll just stand up and review the last paper before we, you know, while we're getting the mic fixed. Otherwise, it would have been 10 minutes of dead time. And that's another thing. Everyone will just sit there for 10 minutes just waiting, and they have no one to call or no one to talk to. So, James, I completely agree. You know, that some of this equipment they get is going to waste in some ways.
It's incredible. It's really incredible. As I say, this teleconference staff is professional level teleconference meeting staff, and it's just sitting there slowly decaying. It's really incredible. I mean, just to reinforce that point, we had recently at a school I went to, we had a very, very senior academic come to make a presentation. When it came time for him to talk, no microphone. Can you believe it? This guy, they're charging some mega dollars for a presentation. These guys haven't even got a microphone ready for this guy to use. It was only the grace of God that I was happening to record his presentation so we could fix something up to let everyone hear what the guy was there to say.
Right. No, I've seen this happen a lot. And no mic and no projector working. They say, just go on ahead, even though the equipment's all top-notch. And I think usually it's the problem of lines of responsibility. You know, no one's directly responsible for that. Therefore, it slips between, and then nobody jumps up and does anything. I'm always finding myself, you know, holding myself back. You know, I know what to do to solve this video problem. You just got to switch the video output or resolution or something on Windows, but I'm holding myself back because I know if I jump up there, I don't know what the repercussions will be, but it might not be it might not be good. So this is I think this fits into the presentations we get, because you know in Taiwan, especially China, I think you in Hong Kong, me and James have experienced this in Hong Kong, you have this authoritarian kind of structure. If the lines aren't clear of who's responsible for what, then you don't jump out of your way to do it. And then we get into presentations. And I have some video of a very typical presenter here. I don't mean to put her down. Her paper was okay. But it's very normal in these situations that they throw up text. You can see one of the slides there all full of text. And basically her whole presentation was reading from the text. She stood behind the podium in a kind of frozen stance and continued this for quite some time. And I don't think anyone in the room understood a single word she said.
She was talking Chinese or English?
The conference, because they had a lot of international people there, was in English, which, of course, is a problem. It's not her native language. But she was also, you know, into the mic so close you could... basically swallowing the mic and then garbling her words out. And it just went on and on. But Robert, I don't know, but I've seen conferences in Chinese that are very, very similar with Chinese speakers. It doesn't seem to be necessarily a language issue. And then what James and I were just talking about a minute ago was lots of times these presenters are not professors but students.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, Clyde, you and I saw that so dramatically in a conference we went to just recently in China. I mean, we'd marked off a few what looked like pretty interesting presentations, and we get to that session and... we're wondering where the professor is, and then a couple of students start talking, and we realize maybe the professor's actually officing a little bit of Shanghai, and he's left his students there to do the talking, because that's sort of part of the hierarchy, and as senior people, they should be out doing something else, and they leave the junior ones to present. So
yeah, I've rarely seen this overseas, though. I've rarely seen a paper presented and the professor's name's on it, but then I go there, it's the student presenting. I've seen students present papers. Robert, maybe you have some input on this. Is this just a cultural difference in the academic, you know, lines of responsibility?
Well, I think this is an interesting question, because I see this much less, I think, in the humanities type conferences. That is to say, the professor is almost always there to present the paper. Hmm. It's much less common that the student, it will be a student presenting the paper. There are exceptions to this. I think this seems to be much more common in two places. In number one, in social sciences. I guess that's where I would put the business conferences. And the other, interesting, is in the engineering conferences.
Engineering,
they, which there were a couple of these conferences that I was requested to attend at the school that I used to teach at, because they like to have a good turnout. And so we, you know, especially at least with the higher academic type people, you know, there's always a few, you know, impressive sounding titles around. And I noticed that this did happen there as well. So this is an interesting situation. I'm not sure quite why it would be more common in social sciences and engineering than it would be, for example, in humanities. In general, I would say that the couple of things. First, the quality of the presentation, it will depend. The ones that are always reliable, right, are the keynote speakers.
Yes.
Mm. Wouldn't you agree on this, that these very seldom get sloughed off? That's always, keynote speaker, he's going to be there.
Right.
Yeah. Right. He's going to be presenting his paper.
Totally.
And he or she. Let's.
My he is always gender neutral.
Understood. Yeah. Of course, the keynote person is usually someone very big, and that they'll always show up. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, they're being keynoted. One reason people become keynote speakers is because they are noted for giving good presentations, right? That's at least in the humanities. This is definitely the case. It's very seldom, unless it's something extra special, you know, some new or interesting idea that's popped out, and it's awfully confusing, but everyone wants to hear about it, and so everyone goes to ask questions. Basically, that's unusual. Usually, the keynote speaker is someone who's giving some sort of summary or overview of a particular field, and everyone's listened to his speeches, presentations before, and says, this is someone who can tell us what's what.
Yes.
Right.
Agreed.
Right. That's that case. For the other cases, however, I think you made a couple of really interesting points. One was that the way the presentations, especially... Everyone does PowerPoint now, right? And it's so text heavy that it's just really one wonders you know, what the speaker is up there for, because he's just reading the PowerPoint slides. Right. This is really. At least in business, you can have graphs, you can have charts, you can have pictures that sort of, you know.
But let's be honest here, Robert. If the text is on the screen, they'll read that. If a chart's on the screen, they'll read the text that they've already written to go with that chart.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, what I'm saying is that in things like, say, linguistics, there are no charts. There's just text. Right, and so this becomes a very striking thing that they're actually showing you what they're saying, and I think this is partly the older guys. The older guys don't really know. They know that everyone wants to do PowerPoint now, but they don't really know what it's for. And so they say, well, you know, here's what I'm going to say. And they put it up on the screen. So this is, I think there's some variety here in that. But regardless, I think the text thing is very striking. There's always lots and lots of text. And in most Western presentations, this simply isn't so.
Right. I think that's what we're getting at. There seems to be this big gap. I have presentation classes. I even have a presentation website. And it's so hard to pull the students away from this complete text-driven concept. And where do they get it from? I mean, it must come from somewhere. They don't just make it up, I don't think.
Have you ever seen a Chinese painting?
Yes. And you think this
Have you ever seen a Chinese painting?
With lots of text.
It's what Western painting has someone writing a poem on it? No one, right?
I've never seen that.
What Chinese painting has a poem written on the upper right-hand corner?
Almost
at least
one.
Half. Yeah, that's right.
I'm looking at one right now. Yes.
Right, and so I think that a lot of this is where it's coming from. You know, there's got to be text along with. I mean, pictures, of course, there's a picture, but there should be some text accompanying it too. It fits in. It's supposed to be there. If you've ever been to some of these national parks or historic spots, a nice, beautiful, scenic set of rocks, and there's got to be something carved on the rocks, isn't there?
Some text. Yeah.
And think about it. Yeah, there's always something written on the scenery, right? There's text on the scenery. So I think that this is partly. I mean, it is a cultural thing. They would like to have something that fits in nicely with the general picture of it.
That's a good point. So, but I mean, that's like the cup half full, half empty. On the other hand, I could say, look, with every painting, half of them don't have any text, or lots of them also have a big picture next to the text. But when I see these presentations, even by young people who are familiar with PowerPoint, they seem just totally driven by a syncopated reading of the text. And does this come, you think, from the classroom experience where the teachers do it this way? Because
Yes. I think that's a big part of it, too. I mean, in the past, of course, I started going to classes in Taiwan a long time ago, and it was unusual to have handouts in class. The professor would just get up and start writing on the blackboard. And there were teachers who were very well known for this. I mean, that was the class.
And then you copy it.
That was the class. Mm-hmm. He's writing on the blackboard, and he's covered the whole blackboard. And then he'll pause for about 2 minutes and say, "Got that?" And then he'll go back and erase everything and start doing another set. And that was, an hour.
Right.
Okay, everyone, take a break. Let your cramping hands loosen up a bit, and then we come back again. Second hour, more copying.
So that's kind of the model they have to work on, the kind of perceptual model. This is the teacher presenting information. This is how it's presented, and this is the way I'm going to do it.
I'm wondering, too, just another sort of question into the pile that, of course, when our whole concept of a PowerPoint is brief, we learn these sort of rules, such as you shouldn't have more than 6 words on a line, you shouldn't have more than 6 bullets on a PowerPoint, and then you shouldn't have more than like 6 PowerPoint slides without a picture or something to engage the audience. But that, of course, is focusing then on summarizing information, reducing it to its minimal basic components. And that, to me, feels a little bit Western rather than Eastern. I don't know what your take is on that, Robert.
No, I think that's part of the problem. I'll turn it around. I'm not sure. I mean, it seems to me that the use of the graphics and PowerPoint and all this is sort of a technology-driven thing itself. And I mean, I've seen plenty of PowerPoint presentations where there's not that much to throw up. Why bother? You know what I mean? That is to say that there's sort of a demand for using PowerPoint even when there's really nothing to put up there.
Yeah, good point.
And I think this is, you know, this is the, it's sort of the opposite side when you go to some Western conferences, especially, that they're throwing up, okay, here's a cute picture here. It really has nothing to do with the presentation, but it's sort of distracting people from the fact that my presentation isn't being done very well. And let me give you a summary of what I just said, because I really didn't say it very clearly.
Summarize it again.
So, yeah, that's right. So here's what I'll talk and talk and talk, and then there, you see those three bullets on the screen there? That's what I mean.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. So just,
so there's something
the
about that, like
what's coming
forcing
out
the forcing the detail down. You know, like this is all of the information. You know, it's just like handing in reports, or even for some, not all professors, but it seems very common in Taiwan. Length is everything.
Yes. Yeah. There's that. I mean, I think that James has a good point that there's often a failure to give a clear overview or a clear summary of a lot of the points that people are making in academic conferences in Taiwan anyway. I think that's very often the case. I don't know why that should be. Is it specific? Is this something that only happens here?
Yeah, in this kind of style, my feeling is yes, that where, like this slide that we've got here that Clive's just talked about, this whole pile of text on the screen, and then you read it, and then click, and then, wow, we've got another paragraph. And let me just talk about an experience when we were at this conference in Shanghai. It was really amazing because we got an interesting session. We had, I think, 4 speakers in the session, and then just as the session chair came in to start lining things up, this other academic came up. I think he was from Taiwan, and he sort of talks to the chair, and he persuades him that his name had been on the schedule, but for some reason had been removed, and that he really should present. So we all 4 papers were presented, and then he had somehow managed to get the track chair to let him present, and he starts off. And as he stands up, the whole room sort of goes, and there's this huge sigh of sort of, oh my God. And then he starts off, and he starts off, and he's about 60, and he says, my presentation is on YouTube. And I think, you know, this one person sat next door to me says, you know, what does this guy know about YouTube? I don't think he knows how to turn on the computer. And so this thing went on and on and on. And it was sort of vaguely interesting, and then it got worse and worse and worse. Lots of text, like we're seeing here. And then the real killer was when one piece of text at the bottom said, table 1.
Yeah, we're and already like 10 minutes into
went,
it.
Click,
yeah.
I'm up, and it said, chart 3. And then it dawned on me that this actually had just been cut and pasted from a thesis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, right.
And,
right.
You know, this guy went on and on and on. He went on way beyond any of the other presenters' time, so he liked to hold up. Totally. He ate up question time.
Yep.
He ate up everything. In the end, people were coming in saying, look, you've got to stop. You've got to stop. The bus is waiting. And this guy went, wah, wah, wah. And everyone was, you know, you could feel everyone was edging just to get out. But they didn't want to appear too rude.
And I mean, we're not talking about, like, the HTT protocol to get the SSL connection linked up. He's saying things like, in YouTube, you can take a video and you can send it, and then people can see it.
This is amazing.
Robert, I kid you not. I swear this was...
this is very familiar. Number one, he's senior.
Right.
Right? Number two... In some conference I've been at, they have people there with a gong.
Do
they have a gong person there?
No, that's a big mistake, and that's something that shocks a lot of foreigners. I'm glad you brought it up, because they'll be at a conference.
They didn't want a gong; they wanted a gun.
Yeah, they need a gun, and this guy, an elephant gun,
a gong.
And they'll have a bell that rings, and lots of foreigners are shocked by this because it's kind of Pavlovian in a way. But I have found out in Taiwan, in China, in Hong Kong, this is really a great way. Take care of that problem.
Well, in the case that you're telling me about, I suspect it would have made no difference whatsoever.
Yeah, The track chair, you know, this guy even stood up.
Yeah.
He'd sort of given a signal, a hand signal, it was time to finish.
Yeah, he was giving hand signals.
Then he stood up. The guy kept going. He moved closer to the podium. This guy kept going. He just shook his head. He went and sat down. The guy kept going.
Yeah, he didn't want to be rude. So he's like kind of wandering around, giving him the eye, giving him hand signals.
Looking at his wall. The guy got wah, 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 wah.
Oh, well, I've been in presentations where it's this sort of person. Let's say it this way. Fairly senior. Okay? Fairly senior. Feels like everyone in the room is either my student or it's a student of my student. And so, of course, you know, I need to speak clearly and let them know what I'm talking about.
I can back you up on this, Robert, because I've been in meetings like this, and everyone who's calling everyone something, everyone in the room who's calling the speaker something, they all call him 老师, teacher.
Yeah, they all call him. Yeah, I mean, you can't tell him to do that. And right. So the way that this... This is handled. This is handled very simple. Everyone gets up and walks out. Right? And he's still going on.
Right.
There's like two people left in the hall, and he's still happily going on.
Which leads into another little point here, that actually in Asian conferences, it's not uncommon that people in the audience can speak and get up and walk in and out. And so it wouldn't really be that unusual or rude. But, so that would be one way to just wrap that up. People just leave and the room's empty.
Right. This is very important when you're scheduling a conference like this, that you have to make sure that people like this go at the end of the session.
He was at the end, but they had a bus to go back to the hotel, and so they literally came in, right, James? Okay. And said, the bus is leaving.
That's okay. You know, everyone goes. You know,
and that's exactly what happened. Everybody jumped up to get on the bus.
They sprinted out of there. They just ran, you know. There was a pile of smoke at this guy's left. So, but the thing from my point of view, and I think this is kind of touched on another interesting point, is I presented a paper. I could see a couple of people in the audience were like edging to ask a few questions. I, of course, was really excited because I presented the work. It's an ongoing project, and I really, you know, relished the idea of a bit of feedback to sort of tweak anything that I hadn't kind of noticed in the project that could be, you know, updated before I sent the work out to try and get it published. And then Mr. YouTube came, and he came, and he came, and he came, and he killed. Because, of course, by the end, there was no questions, because there was no time, because the questioners were on the bus and off to the hotel. Now, of course, this makes me think that from a Western point of view, I'm seeing this whole conference as a process of academic exchange, sharing ideas, maybe a little bit of challenge, opening new perspectives. But really, from this Chinese point of view, I don't think that the conference is seen in that kind of way.
Yeah, well, I think one good point is just how a person like that would get into the conference. And this leads to the way they're invited or organized. And I think a lot of Chinese conferences, a lot of inconsistency, some good papers from big shots, and there's some weird things that get in. And I've been involved in some of these, and they're external review that's semi-blind or maybe a little bit not 20/20 vision. And then the people who are important, who are connected, do have to be let in, and then they send their students or whoever. Or just like Robert's saying, it's the seniority thing. You cannot refuse this guy. And so that's what happens. And James, I think in this conference, we had sent a few papers, and one of our papers even had been rejected or something. And then in the meantime, somebody writing about YouTube can get in. It's just bizarre beyond understanding.
Exactly.
Well, let me just offer you what I think is sort of a key to at least one of the mysteries of conferences in Asia in general, in particular, but perhaps more general too. The word is schmooze.
Schmooze.
That's right. What are conferences for? What are conferences for? Are they really there so that you go and sit down and listen to the latest research papers? I think about this for a minute, and I would like to propose that at least this at best is only half of the purpose of a conference. The other purpose of a conference is schmoozing. And that means you get to sit down with people who are in your field or with people who are related to your field who you perhaps have never had a chance to talk face-to-face with before. You get to know them, and you get to find out what they're really doing. Forget about the paper. You get to find out where they're working. You get to find out who they're working with. You get to find out what sort of grants they've had lately. You get to find out, you know, if they have any hot subjects, any hot students, et cetera, et cetera. You get to have dinner with them in Asia in particular. You get to sit down and have dinner with them, and you get to drink with them.
Yeah, I think this all feeds into, of course, what you're saying is true in Western conferences too. It, you know, it's the meet with people, the schmooze to do this. But in the Chinese context, I think it's much more about that hierarchy. You know, I got to go there because my professor is going to be there. I got to meet up with him. This is the guy who's on the grant committee, and he was my professor's friend, and they got me on a committee. I have to show up for that. It's almost a responsibility thing. And that the students present, do a bad job or whatever, is all kind of irrelevant and off to the side. Mm. I mean, I've never heard another Chinese person criticize the conference by saying, man, it was all presented by students and it really sucked. I've never heard that.
I really didn't learn anything new from that. People would come away with a bundle of name cards and be super happy about who they've met.
Yeah, who they've met.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I would really suggest that except it would depend on the case, but a lot of the times, you know, the paper is being presented, the professor is not there, but he's not out shopping. No, he's out chatting with such and such or with so and so. There's a room, you know, there'll be lots of little rooms where people are sitting around talking.
If they're in China and they're from Taiwan, they're usually on a tour bus. But the people who are on the tour bus are all very well-connected people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
be on that tour together. I think that's the key thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It depends, I guess, too, on the, you know, sort of the specific circumstance of it. In Taiwan, for example, I mean, it's a small island, and so your chances to meet people, to bump into people, they're fairly good. I wonder what it's like in China, though. How easy is it for someone in Beijing to pop down to Shanghai to see some people in the department of marketing personnel or whatever.
That's a long trip. Yeah, it's a long trip.
Yeah.
At this conference we were at in Shanghai, there were a lot of people from universities pretty far out. It was a long trip for them. But even so.
Like where? Like out west?
Out west, yeah.
Like Sichuan.
There was Sichuan, some people from a university in Sichuan. And there were some people from Beijing, too.
Uh-huh. And some people who come down, well, that's not quite China, is it? Let's not get too carefree here, but I was going to say Mongolia.
There's Inner Mongolia, which is China, and that's way up there. Those people will will seize any opportunity possible to have a chance to come do some shopping. I mean, have you ever tried to shop in Ulaanbaatar?
Yeah, right, exactly, right. But, you know, again, and even these guys, the guys from, I think it was from Sichuan University, or there was a junior college or someplace, they were all together. And when they were at the conference, I was kind of listening in. Of course, being a foreigner there, they don't think you can understand anything they say, and they're all talking. And all they're doing there is to meet up with somebody who's connected with somebody. It's not really about the presentation or the paper at all. And as James says, lots of times it's just a student's paper anyhow. And so this is, I think, the general thing. You know, if you go to the conference and then you're disappointed with the presentation style or the papers, it has a lot to do with that people are there for a different reason, which is that hierarchy, that connection. For me, I go a lot in Taiwan. I'm almost always at conferences, Robert, to basically pay respect or kowtow to my superiors, which are my professors or deans or presidents.
Okay, I gave you the English word schmooze. Perhaps it doesn't quite capture the flavor. Here's the Chinese word. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes. 学术大, bye-bye. I've heard this. This is very frequent description of these big conferences with everyone
there.
That's good.
I haven't heard it. I haven't heard that used in that context, but that's good. Yeah. That's very good. I was thinking kowtow, but bye-bye makes a lot of sense.
All right. Bye-bye is when, they go to the temple meetings. It's the for example, it's the birthday of the goddess Mazu, right? And everyone is going to go there, and they're all going to, you know, stick in their incense into the incense pot, and then they're going to see if they can get a good you know, they shake the, what do they call it, jiaobei, I forget how to say it in English. These wooden sticks that they shake and they drop, and they see what kind of answer the gods are giving them, and so on and so forth. It's very lively, to use a phrase that you once wrote a paper about, Clyde. It's very renao.
Yes. That's a good point.
And this is a big deal for academic conferences. Of course, we're talking about the big ones here, not the smaller ones.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, in a way, you're going there, you're paying your respect. It's kind of pay your respect / praying for a home run or something, right? Or at least praying that nothing bad happens. I don't know how many times my wife has told me, you know, you've got to go to that conference, you know, if so-and-so is going to be there, if he reviews one of our things, you know, we could be screwed, right?
And like you've mentioned, Clyde, you know, openly at some of these conferences where you get all the big people there, then they're actively discussing grant proposals and agreeing really who knows who and who needs to pass.
Okay, so I think it's all that hierarchy is very cultural, and for Chinese, for locals, it'd be a very good, successful conference, but from the Western perspective, it may be very mixed. There may have been some really bad papers in there and bad presentations, but I do think it's quite obvious at the end video I have here in a couple of slides, we have a guy who came over from Australia, and he gave a presentation, and right away, he's away from the podium. He begins by showing Google Maps and zooming in to show where his campus is, where he's doing this research at, and all very interesting. But the reason I bring it up is the person who was reviewing his paper. Now, usually in these conferences, you have one person presenting and one person reviewing, and the reviewer will, at the end, give some criticism or input, which sometimes for Westerners is a little bit shocking, but here totally normal. In this case, he had a senior Chinese professor giving the input. And at the end, it wasn't really...
I should dive in as well, just to add, Clyde, that that person usually represents question time, don't they, really?
Yeah,
you
then they'll do question
free
time.
Forum.
Yeah.
You have the reviewer basically criticizing, offering the feedback rather than open discussion.
Yeah, it's different than a Western approach usually. You'll have one person who got the paper early, and his job is to criticize, and they get paid money, and they're expected to bring in some criticism. Now, in this conference, I criticized some of the papers before me. They're all students' papers of such poor quality. I don't think they understood anything I said about the statistics. This guy was presenting something, and it wasn't statistical. It wasn't even really hypothesis-driven. It's just a kind of about the airplane school and how they use some simulators and how they work out the schedules. Very kind of, you know, pragmatic stuff. And so when it came to the end, he kind of felt there's no point for a review or criticism. There's nothing to criticize. And so the Chinese senior professor who was running it, who was supposed to review it, said, okay, now we will have the review input. And the Australian guy was saying, now, wait a minute, since there's really nothing to talk about, I have a funny joke I would like to tell. And the Chinese professor, like, he nodded, mm-hmm. And now we will move into the review section. And then the Australian guy says, well, if you just give me a minute, I just need a minute. I have a funny joke. It's actually kind of a little bit, you know, a little bit racy, but I'll tell it. And the Chinese professor nodded his head and smiles, mm-hmm. And in this paper, we can see that. It was exactly the reverse. You know, it was the guy reviewing it instead of the speaker now was just locked into this kind of authoritarian march. And the Australian guy was really lost because he's very outgoing. You can see in the pictures and the video, very, you know, presenter-oriented. And he thought his stuff was no big deal, and he wanted to tell a joke. And he must have said it 3 or 4 times. You know, no, just give me 1 minute. If we had just 1 minute. And then the other guy's just moving on and on.
Well, this makes sense to me, too, actually. This is definitely a misunderstanding because, you see, the reviewer's name is on the program, too.
Yes.
What are you saying? Are you saying you're going to take my place on the program and so I don't get to talk at all?
Right, right. There's not that flexibility. You know, it's formalized. And I think a lot of foreigners might come in and not realize just, you know, when I was in PhD in Taiwan and when I've been to a lot of these things, things have this very formal aspect to them. And that's the way it is. The reviewer's time is the reviewer's time. And he kept trying to begin the joke, too, because every time he said, if you just have a minute, and the professor would nod his head and smile, you know, and then he'd begin, and then he's like, just. It was very, you know, kind of flabbergasted. You know? He's like, well, I just need a minute. It's a funny joke. And it just wrapped up, and the guy mumbled on about his review. I don't think anyone quite understood what he said. And then there was an applause, and he's sitting there wanting to tell his joke.
Well, there's a moral there, definitely. Make sure you get the punchline in before your time is up, because afterwards you don't get it.
Exactly, right.
Or just don't stop. Just keep going.
Yeah, right. Don't give anybody space to bump into you, to butt in.
I think it's so interesting because I think one of the things that I'm taking away from our discussion here today is that really the paper that you choose to present or the topic you're going to talk on is really a key just to getting to the event. And getting to the event is about then meeting people, networking, the schmooze, the whole bye-bye idea of showing respect to people that are senior, people that are important to you. And the paper is just like that key. Whereas for foreign presenters, it's almost the other way around. You know, that's then giving them access to talk about topics that are important rather than meeting people. I think the thing that we'd say is both are important to both situations, but they have different kind of importance in the sense that Chinese would rank meeting people, networking, schmooze, bye-bye as so much more important than the Western people in this kind of forum, I think. And I think that underpins a lot of these slightly unnerving experiences that we all have when we go to these kind of meetings.
Yeah, I think it also, an important part of it is this phrase I have that distant cultures are not equidistant. I think these things work differently in the different directions. So if you're a Chinese presenter and you go over to the U.S. to present, or you send your student to present and they present in the kind of monotone way and they get it over with, mission accomplished. On the other hand, if you're coming from the West over here, things tend to get you get more into a kind of shock syndrome, you know, because you're confronting things in such a different way. But it doesn't let you get by, like this guy trying to tell a joke. You can't get by with it. But if you're going to the U.S. to give a presentation and you're monotone and you drone on, the worst that happens is people walk out. And I've seen it. I've seen that in many ones in the U.S. You'll have your Chinese presenter and he'll begin, and people will just literally say, oh, I'm in the wrong room, and just stand up and walk out. Well, you know, but as far as the presenter is concerned, you know, their mission was present a paper and they did it, and mission accomplished. They call back the professor, mission done, and it's something on your list. So there you go. So this, in one direction, it functions. In the other one, it doesn't. and this is always a problem I have, Robert, and I've talked to you about in different contexts. You know, when you try to tell someone here in Asia, you say, yeah, but, you know, doing it this way isn't going to work. And then they respond by saying, well, I've been in America many conferences, never had a problem.
Well, they got what they wanted, right? They got what they needed. And right. that was you know, no, I haven't had a problem. Have you?
Right, exactly, right. So this is a very interesting idea. You know, you get it is distant cultures are not equidistant. Doing an activity in one direction may appear smooth, and then another one, you can't get away with it at all. So anyway, we will be going to more conferences, and if you are planning to go to a conference in Asia, maybe pay attention to some of those details, some of those things. And I have to say again, I've never been more impressed with conference facilities or equipment than I am in Asia. And I've been, go back to the U.S., you get really dumpy places, or sometimes they throw you in a hotel. I was at a hotel once, and presenters from Belgium, I think, walked up to present. I was running the presentation seminar at that time. They walk up, and they have a notebook, and they say, where do we plug in? And because it's in a hotel and the university had rented the space, they didn't rent projectors or hookups or anything like that. You had to bring your own slides. And I, you know, the reason is the hotel rooms were already so expensive. And then the projectors to rent those are $300-$400 a pop, and so they couldn't afford that. And yeah, you rent a few of them, you could buy one.
Yeah. Gosh.
Interesting.
So yeah, I think that's a huge difference. On the positive side, it's just got this incredible infrastructure and technology. On the negative side, get ready for some very different perspectives. So Robert, you're going to be running a few meetings yourself. I hope you won't make them mind-numbing.
Oh, I have my gong beaters already lined up.
Okay, now your point is you're not going to allow people to be mind-numbing. You're going to just
That's it.
Beat the gong.
And we have 2 7-foot eunuchs in the department that are there with one has a gong, the other has a very large sword.
Anybody who goes over on time gets punished.
I guarantee you our meetings will not be mind-numbing. In fact, they might look more like one of those Chinese Kung Fu movies.
Ouch.
So next time I send you an invitation to come speak down here, by all means accept. You'll love it.
Okay. Sounds good.
But just don't go over that 10 minutes.
But just don't go over the 10 minutes because you might live to regret it.
And with that, we'll wrap up this show. See you all at the next conference.
Great. Okay. See ya.
This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Oh,